Time for another dose of cannabis science. We're joined again all the way from New York by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, a associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany. And Dr. Earlywine, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm hoping you're having a good holiday season. How was Thanksgiving for you?
Oh, splendid. Splendid.
Lots to be thankful for, especially with a couple of the court decisions we've seen recently. But what I wanted to talk to you about today was something, we've debunked this so many times, the so-called gateway theory. But it popped up again right near my hometown. I've got a post up on the stash about this billboard that's funded by one of our local anti-drug groups. And it says, "Marijuana, a gateway drug to meth." And then it's got the picture of the guy smoking a joint on one side. Then they got the pockmarked, meth addict on the other side. And I just thought, we should bring you back on so we can tell people the true facts and the real research behind this so-called gateway theory.
I'm happy to discuss it. And we've talked about it before. My friend Ralph Tarter at the University of Pittsburgh has data following folks up over 10 years and some of them even more, showing that, use of cannabis, even heavy use early in life, does not guarantee any kind of use of hard illicit drugs. In truth, some analyses I did years ago suggested that even if you had used cannabis, your chances of using cocaine were less than 1 in 100 and probably closer to 1 in 300.
Mm.
And when you just start looking at the data from just big national drug surveys, we don't have a lot on meth, but heroin, for example, we've got, over 100 million people who've probably tried cannabis in their lives and fewer than 6 million who've used heroin. So obviously there really isn't much of a gateway. People seem to get confused because we tend to remember examples that fit our stereotypes and forget the ones that don't. So anytime you find somebody who is a heroin addict and ask, "Did you ever smoke pot?" We seem to remember those. The folks who do have problems with hard drugs who haven't used marijuana often either don't end up in these studies or we just tend to forget about them.
Hmm.
So one of the big studies that came out around 2005 on this, anybody who had used a hard drug before marijuana, they kicked them out of the sample. So, of course, there was not going to be any evidence against the gateway under those kinds of circumstances. And these studies tend to be really biased against that. And particularly with this one where meth is the issue, my goodness, meth has enough negative consequences on its own that ought to be played up rather than somehow trying to drag marijuana in with a drug that's clearly got a markedly higher dependence potential and a whole lot of horrid negative health consequences.
Mm. Yeah, I've got a theory about this, and I just wanted to get your input on it, too, that here in Oregon, we've got a pretty successful medical marijuana program, and about 8% of our population uses marijuana compared to a national average of about 6%, or depending on which, research you're looking at. So we do tend to have more marijuana users, and it tends to have more marijuana acceptance. On the other hand, out in the rural areas of Oregon, there's a huge problem with meth. We see stories on the news all the time of, the meth people stealing the steel off of bridges and such. So my theory here is that they know they can't convince us that marijuana is as bad as they say it is, so they've got to compare it to meth to put some sort of, spookiness on it, I guess. Do you think that's what's going on?
Absolutely, and in fact, this goes back to the 1930s when old Harry Anslinger was our first drug czar, when it was still the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, and he said, marijuana leads to heroin use. The LaGuardia reports that came out in the 1940s suggested this really isn't the case at all. We're talking 60, 70 years ago. We already knew this was wrong, but this is all that folks can come up with anymore to try to make this happen. You can see it's really an absurd argument. And in fact, when you talk to regular users of cannabis, they tend to dislike hard drugs because cannabis is really providing the kind of experience that they want, and these other drugs really don't create anywhere near the same kind of effects.
Yeah, it's like Alan St. Pierre often says that rather than being a gateway, it seems like marijuana is almost a terminus sort of drug.
Well, and the curious thing is, it's very hard to get these published, but, we hear time and again cases of folks who've had problems with alcohol or hard drugs turning to cannabis because it has, really markedly fewer negative consequences and arguably none at all. And, what a surprise, they don't have to hit these hard drugs, if they've got, regular access to clean and appropriate cannabis.
Well, yeah, I've known a few people who have struggled with methamphetamine addiction, and just anecdotally, they've told me that had it not been for cannabis, they don't think they could have kicked or could have gotten off of it. But you say, is there any research on that? Is there anybody that's willing to step forward and do the research on that idea about cannabis?
As you can imagine, these kinds of things are very difficult to get funding for. And the individual case studies are very hard to publish, so everybody sort of brushes it aside as saying, oh, this is just an individual case, it doesn't seem to work. But I've had therapists literally from one end of the country to the other tell me that they've got clients who've succeeded along these lines, and folks who've emailed me time and again saying that this has really been helpful for them. It's unfortunate because people have become more open-minded with things like methadone as a replacement for heroin, or pharmaceutical drugs that people are prescribing in an effort to get folks off prescription stimulants or illicit stimulants. But for some reason, the notion that cannabis might actually be an aid to this has really become controversial. I just sent in my latest book on substance abuse treatment alluding to this idea, and I'm eager to see if my editors try to cut it.
That'll be nice to see. And it kind of also goes back to that Swiss vote that we just saw this week, where the Swiss people voted to make permanent their heroin maintenance program at the same time they voted against decriminalizing cannabis. And my thought was, you know, decriminalize the cannabis, you'll have less heroin addicts. Maybe.
It's so funny how that resistance is still there. And that program has been just wonderfully successful and really turned some lives around, saved literally millions of dollars in just emergency room visits and ODs and just all kinds of wild negative health consequences. And yet the resistance to decriminalizing was still there. I was really surprised by that.
Yeah, very, very strange. Now, as I was writing up the post on this, I, of course, had to go out and get some of the links to, of course, the Institute of Medicine from 1999 on this whole gateway theory. And I got this really interesting quote from them where they say, in fact, most drug users begin with alcohol and nicotine before marijuana, usually before they're of legal age. And that is also backed up from a 2003 quote I found in the Journal of the American Medical Association saying that early regular use of tobacco and alcohol emerged as the two factors most consistently associated with later illicit drug use and abuse or dependence. So I'm wondering then, Doctor, why don't they say alcohol and tobacco are the gateway drugs?
The funny thing is, Russ, my friend Linda Collins at Penn State has data suggesting that little kids who drink a lot of caffeine are actually the ones who may be at greatest risk for developing drug problems later on. And I think what this says is it's not really the drugs that do this. It's that there's a subset of folks who just love to do everything. And I'm afraid we all know those people. And what a surprise, they do end up running into problems. But it says a lot more about people than it does about drugs.
So we've got the facts on our side on this. It looks like the research has been done, and all the serious researchers, you know, believe there's really no such thing as this gateway effect. What are we going to do to get this through people's heads, you know, in the public mind, to convince them that this gateway theory is bunk?
This is actually a really common error that people make in logic, where they think if something comes before something else, it's the cause of something else. And I'm afraid I teach this to my 4-year-old with the classic game of pull my finger. You know, it's just because something happened first doesn't mean it's a cause. And I feel like we have to keep giving examples like this time and again. The number of churches in a city and the amount of crime in a city tend to co-vary. And in fact, that doesn't mean churches cause crime. We just have to really keep using these outrageous examples until people finally get it through their heads that this is the same messed up logic as we have in pull my finger or in the idea that churches cause crime.
Yeah, I think also what hurts people in trying to uncover the lie behind it is the fact that marijuana is illegal. And since it's illegal and the other drugs are illegal, they figure all illegal kind of goes together. You know, if we can kind of separate their minds from the illegality of it and look at the causes, you know, that the drug itself does not cause the use of another drug, I think that's where we're going to have to go with that.
Well, and in fact, we saw in some of the early data from the Netherlands when they separated the cannabis market from the hard drug market, they did see drops in hard drug use. And I think that in some ways is saying if there was any kind of gateway, it was that people were going to the illicit market as a whole and getting these hard drugs presented to them in a way that was, you know, a product of being in the underground market. Whereas if we had a separate tax and regulated market for cannabis, obviously folks could get that without having exposure to meth and drugs that have, some really harsh problems associated with their use.
Yeah, or as I like to say, you know, marijuana is not a gateway to hard drugs. Marijuana is a gateway to hard drug dealers.
Exactly. Very well put. And then people tend to forget the, you know, folks like Allen Ginsberg, who shot heroin first and then used cannabis. And he said, yep, heroin, it's a gateway drug.
Well, Dr. Leewine, thanks for joining us. And before we go, you know, we just got through the Thanksgiving season. And of course, Christmas is coming up. And, you know, those of us in the cannabis community already have somewhat of a battle with what we call the munchies. And of course, holiday, the munchies are very, very fat and calorie laden. So any tips on helping us get through these holiday seasons and staying in the same pants or dress size?
The impact of cannabis on appetite is very real, as folks who saw Carl Hart's presentation at the Normal Conference in October realize, yes, indeed, if you are using cannabis, you do tend to consume more calories. The big picture on this, of course, is there's an opportunity to wait until after you've eaten in order to go ahead and fire up the vaporizer, and I think that that can be really adaptive for a lot of folks. The other thing that's really a wonderful lesson of this plan is let's really pay attention to our food under the circumstances. Take bites about the size of your thumbnail, tend to really relish them, enjoy them, talk about them with your friends, how good the food tastes, rather than just woofing it down in front of the TV, and what a surprise you find, you enjoy the meal more and actually consume less. It takes a while for your brain to register that your stomach's actually full, and so we need to sort of spread the meal out a little bit and give yourself a little bit of time. Some adaptive things that a colleague of mine, Drew Anderson here, who studies eating, has found is that basically if you put a little bit on your plate, walk away from the big table, eat that little bit, and then make it so you have to decide to actually get up and go get more before you do, people tend to consume less. And it's an amazing opportunity to see how if you quit a little bit before you actually feel full, you find you don't feel completely nauseated later on.
Those are good tips for any time of the year, but especially the holidays. And I guess my tip would be get yourself one of those gas mask bongs. It's really hard to eat when those are strapped on. Dr. Leewine, thanks for joining us again here on the Daily Audio Stash. We'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it.